And welcome to The Business of Family Business. It's presented by CMA. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. Family businesses are a big part of the culture of St. Louis, and it's important to share their stories, not only from the standpoint of a consumer to learn about what goes into a family business, but also if you're a business owner yourself, what are the different struggles and the turning points of a family business that you can learn from yourself? Today, we're joined by Jason Shupp. He's with Ferguson Roofing. As a third-generation owner, what are the different experiences that he's had so far, not only learning about the legacy, but moving the company to the next generation? And how has that changed over the years? That's all on this edition of The Business of Family Business. First, I want to learn a little bit about the background of Ferguson Roofing, and Jason Shupp joins us in studio along with Dan Bean from CMA. Tell us a little bit about Ferguson Roofing.
Ferguson Roofing started pretty traditionally in that, you know, the first generation, which was my grandparents, were your basic mom-pa shop. They worked out of their home in Ferguson, Missouri, and did that for most of the time for Ferguson's history. Then when my father got involved, who actually was the son-in-law, my grandparents had four children, three daughters and a son, and none of them really had any particular interest in the business, is probably the easiest way to put it. And my father, who had a corporate background, got introduced to the business and really saw a lot of opportunity in that it was financially a very feasible operation. So when he got involved with the business, that's when the transition went from the ma and pa that you typically see at the first generation to a more sophisticated business, mm-hmm. where, you know, a building was built and, you know, they moved their operations into that. You started to add layers of infrastructure, staffing. That eventually led into, you know, different lines of business, channels, more services, the service area extended, things that you would see just with the next evolution of the business. And then when the third generation got involved, which is myself and my brother, you know, our jobs during our tenure was to not only sustain the operation that it grew into, but continue to evolve and adapt to the very changing times.
So what would have been the year that it was founded?
It was founded in 1939.
Great.
And my father got involved in the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. And then my grandfather officially stepped down in 1980. And then my brother and I, we officially took helm of the ship in 2006.
One of the interesting things you said about your father was he was an in-law of the business. So what was that like taking over a business when there was other family members that were more closely related?
It's hard for me to entirely appreciate that because, you know, during that time I was, you know, a couple years old when all that was happening. Mm-hmm. There didn't seem to be any struggle or issues. At least I've never heard any stories, you know, during my youth of any issues. The children themselves, as I said, didn't have any particular interest at the time. Mm-hmm. You have three daughters in the mix, and I think generationally and culturally, it was probably not so much that they would be, you know, pressured into running a construction type business. So there didn't seem to be any issues with that. Now, my mother was involved with the business, you know, obviously being married to my father. So there was a connection there.
Yeah, Dan, you mentioned, and Dan from CMA, Dan Bean, one of the things I've learned about the transitioning that goes on between companies, a lot of times the oldest family member feels like they're entitled to the business sometimes. That's just the mentality that seems kind of common. So why is it like that? Why is it that, I guess, the siblings, in some cases, fight over the business and they feel like, being the firstborn, they're the ones entitled to something?
Well, that's an old European concept. It's called primogeniture, and that is the concept that the oldest son gets the business, mm-hmm. gets the all the family assets. And out of Europe, there was a couple of rules. That was one, and the other was all of the family assets went to the oldest. They weren't distributed equally, and that maintained an aristocratic class, mm-hmm. in Europe. It meant the assets were not diluted across the members of the next generation. Mm-hmm. So those two concepts come from Europe, and the notion that maintain aristocracy That never came to the United States, at least that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. But primogeniture did get here, and just automatically saying the business goes to the oldest son is really a roll of the dice and not the best way to do it. It's better to figure out what risk you're going to take by giving the leadership reins to this child or that child. And if there's not a good family member, if it's high risk all the way around, then maybe looking for a non-family member to run the business for some period of time.
Yeah. Jason, what's that like for you as a member of the third generation of running a business with Ferguson Roofing? What's that like for you when you think about the next generation that's coming up? Do you want to see that maintain in the family? And are you thinking about the next generational transition?
I always think about the future of the business and sustaining the legacy of the business. Mm-hmm. I think that's important. But during my time with the business, when I say my definition of family has expanded, I look at the entire Ferguson family, and my job is to make sure that I continue to provide for the livelihoods of all the people that work for us. Mm-hmm. Naturally, I need to make sure we service our customers well and stay active in the community, but there's a lot of people who have invested a lot of their time working with us, and I need to make sure that return on investment is respected. How we go forward can be expressed in a lot of different ways. From a traditional bloodline transition, we don't have it necessarily set up mm-hmm. with the current offspring of the owners to be a natural transition into the fourth generation and function in the owner operating role that my brother and I do as the current mm-hmm. owners. But you know, with working with the advisors that we do, you know, as I said, we can explore a lot of different ways that we can have family be involved with ownership and possibly not actively involved with the business.
But on a personal level, you would hope for things like that. Do you feel like that's what you would hope would happen?
I would say as much as I appreciate the legacy of the business and the opportunity to be involved in it the way that I have been mm-hmm. and what that's been able to do to provide for my life and also the things that I get to do for my staff in the community. I mean, as a parent, I actually separate myself from that, and I want mm-hmm. what's best for my son, and I want him to explore whatever he's interested in. Mm-hmm. So I want to teach him entrepreneurship. I want to give him an opportunity to be involved with the business in some capacity, to understand what it means to be a steward of a business and the responsibilities that come with that. But I don't feel compelled to inspire or force him mm-hmm. in any way to follow my exact footsteps.
When we come back, I want to find out the things that motivated Jason to continue on with the business and what he's doing to motivate maybe the next generation to take over. This is the Business of Family Business. It's presented by CMA. I want to tell you about my friends there who make not only the right decisions, but they help you make the right decisions. If you know a family business, you know how hard it could be to pass it along to the next generation. 2/3 of family businesses won't make that transition. That's why it's important to partner with someone that can put a plan together, someone that can help you follow through with it, and someone that can help you manage those odds so they're not against you. It's a great opportunity for you to at least talk to CMA. They can give you a feel of what they can do for your business. They can help you better organize and ultimately obtain the results you want in your marketplace because they know family business. You might even have heard of CMA because of the Family Speaker Series. Generational transition of a family business, it's very complex. The problem that a lot of business owners feel when I talk to them, they say, it feels like I'm doing this alone. Don't do it alone. Let the experienced people at CMA guide you through this process. And let them answer any questions you might have. It's very simple. Just reach out to CMA and Dan Bean. He can talk to you. Go to cmaconsult.com for more. cmaconsult.com. I've been taking care of business. It's all right.
Taking care of business and working overtime.
So what did your dad do for you to get you interested in Ferguson Roofing?
Strangely enough, what he did probably created a disinterest in the roofing business, although it was what he did was very value added in other ways in my life. When you get put on a roofing crew at a relatively young age, you know, during your summers in high school, you definitely learn the value of a dollar. You definitely learn what it means to work hard. Mm-hmm. You definitely learn to appreciate those that are working very hard and probably will be working physically harder than you will have to in your lifetime. So you learn a lot of those really core attributes that I think have helped me be successful in running the business. But when I graduated from high school, I was pretty committed not to getting involved with the business. It seemed very demanding. It's a challenging industry. My father worked very long hours, and And there has to be a passion for something to want to pursue that. So it wasn't until later when I got involved in the business close to my 30s that I saw beyond what I originally had, what was looking at, in that there is a passion for business and all the things that you can do as a business owner. And that's where my passion was really sparked, you know, as a business owner, not so much as a roofer.
Yeah. You probably had a great tan in high school too.
Yes. Yeah. And it kept you very fit.
Let's talk about some of the key things that you brought to the table. So you've been involved since 2000 in an owner capacity with the business?
I've been involved with the business, re-involved with the business, right, since 2003.
Oh, 2000.
And then the end of 2006 was the transition for my brother and I as owners of the business.
What are some of the key decisions you've made that now shapes Ferguson Roofing?
To shape the business, this is going to be an odd answer first, but one is the decision to really know what your core values are, look back through your history, define those core values, and make the decision that if you see that they still hold true, and in a business as old as ours, it becomes clear that they do, is make that decision to stick to those. And however your future strategies are implemented, you know, with technology or with the changing of the times, generationally, culturally, everything in this country, is make the decision to hold your values, just express them in a different way on how you need to just to adjust to the contemporary, you know, era that you're in. Other decisions that we have made was to make sure that we're always surrounded by a lot of talented people. And I mean that both from an advisory capacity. We realize that we don't know everything, that we need additional input. So constantly seek out the best advisors. But then also internally, really make sure that you are recruiting and hiring and retaining the best people. At the end of the day, every business is a people business.
Right.
Not just a customer's service, but to deliver the products and services we do, it's all about the people who make it happen. So our decisions during my tenure have really been based around building the proper culture and infrastructure to develop people in the best way possible.
Dan Bean with CMA, one of the key points that he just mentioned there was keeping that culture inside of a business and also keeping the customer in mind. But then he mentioned that they seeked outside help in the way they looked at it. How important is it to get other perspectives when it comes to running a business?
So it's extremely important, because a given business knows how we do things, and there's a whole lot of other businesses in that same industry who do things slightly different. That doesn't mean everything that another company does is better, but there's probably something they do, maybe two or three things they do, that's better than the way you do. And so you can learn a lot by having that perspective of what others are doing. At a formal level, it's called benchmarking, where you systematically study some of your competitors who are noted as being world-class. But on a more informal level, it is going to trade shows and industry events and just watching what competitors do and observing, picking up things by going to coffee or being involved in a discussion group with others in similar industries or who have similar processes as you. And that is a great way to learn and broaden your perspective. One of the reasons you broaden perspective is so you can see opportunities and how to capitalize on them that your competitors might not see.
Jason with Ferguson Roofing, one of the big contemporary decisions, or what are some of the contemporary decisions you've made? Because how has the industry changed over the last couple of decades?
The industry has changed significantly. One of the largest driving forces has been the advent of storm. Mm-hmm. Reconciliation with insurance claims. In this market in particular, we had a huge hailstorm in 2001 that was one of the largest claim losses nationally at that time. That changed the business models of, actually it created a business model of mobile storm chasing roofing companies. It changed the buying habits, where traditionally people would save for a home capital improvement, mm-hmm. you know, their roof. Now it's pretty much, I don't need to worry about saving for that, because I'll just wait for the insurance.
Wait for the
claim,
next big storm.
When the hailstorm comes through. That it's really commoditized our industry, because now services is less of a talking point, value is less of a talking point. It becomes a transactional component because now we're comparing pricing and competitors based off of an insurance scope sheet. So that was one of the bigger changes in our industry.
Yeah. How do you keep up when there's a event like a hailstorm and then you have a lot of people looking for the same service in a short amount of time? How do you adjust to things like that?
Well, you're going to hear a lot of different answers from different roofing companies if that question was asked of them. For us, we have an advantage in that being a long-term company, having the good fortune to have been as successful as we've been and to have the stability that we do, we can typically keep ourselves staffed up accordingly so that in a storm, our need to scale up is much less daunting than other companies. We're always preparing for a storm. We never bank on it. I'd be irresponsible as an owner if that was my strategy each year, but we're always prepared for it. It adds stress because the pace increases and the sense of urgency increases with our customers, but our resources to navigate through it in most situations, we're usually pretty prepared.
Dan, how about that as an analogy? Always preparing for a storm.
That sounds pretty good to me. But one thing I like about what Jason said is I don't count on that. To count on that would be irresponsible. So that is a very good business practice. You can't count on Mother Nature to deliver business to you, but you do have to be prepared in case she does open up that opportunity, open up that door. You want to be able to take advantage of it in a responsible way. And I think that's what Jason does. He doesn't overpromise, and he is ready. If the opportunity is there, he's ready to jump on it.
I think when a new generation takes over a business, they all have their own ideas. However, they want to respect the way things have been done in the past. We'll talk about how Jason worked that out with Ferguson Roofing coming up next. It's the Business of Family Business presented by CMA on KMOX. So after you took over and your father ran things one way and you had a way that you wanted to run Ferguson Roofing, Jason, kind of talk about that transition in the period of the transition, what it was like then, and kind of talk about, too, the way your father ran it and some of the things you observed from him as when he was the owner of the company.
Excellent question and multifaceted question. Mm-hmm. During that transition, my father had done a really good job in regards to making sure that we were set up with good advisors, including Dan and his organization, to make sure that my brother and I were going to be working well together during the transition, to make sure that we were learning best practices during the transition, to make sure that, you know, as I was becoming the president, that I was learning best practices as a leader. The only shortcoming, I would say, during the transition from my father's perspective was that transition requires growth and movement on both sides, both generations. So my brother and I were trying to do everything that we could going forward. But my father, beyond setting the infrastructure, probably didn't fully appreciate that there's a lot that he has to do, you know, between on how he would coach us, when to let go of the reins, when if there was a disagreement on a strategy during that transition, how to voice those, who to voice them to, or when just to let things go so the boys could succeed or fail on their own during that time. So that was probably the biggest tension was that we needed to take the wheel and him to make sure that, you know, if he was sitting shotgun, that's fine. Just don't reach up and grab the wheel, you know, while we're driving without letting us know first, because that's how you get swerved into the median. It took about 2 years for him to both fully appreciate that the business was running successfully and also to appreciate what retirement feels like. You know, and that's a whole nother conversation, of course. But once he learned how to retire and enjoy the fruits of his labor and appreciate that part of his life, I think that made it easier for him to step back from the business. Mm-hmm. As far as differences in how we did things, the biggest problem with that was times were changing so much right around the transition, you know, outside of our business, that we had to do things radically different from how he did. We still tried to stay true to the core values, but they were expressed very different. And it was such a harsh transition. I think it was hard for my father to really understand why we were doing things so differently so fast. But that's because time was changing so fast because technology was really becoming prevalent right around that time. And so that was a struggle for him. And we tried to walk through that the best we could.
Yeah. Dan, I want to get your input on this. When it comes to the actual transition time, there's always going to be a lot of struggles with finding out there's going to be a new generation coming in. They have maybe some different ideas that they're going to work through. Talk about how difficult it may be during the transition time and then some of the things that you would recommend preparing for moments like that.
It is very different because children are not their parents. You know, you hear the saying, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and that's true, but sometimes the apple may roll before it takes root. So children are not like their parents, and they shouldn't be, because one of the things that the generational transition does, it brings new energy and new ideas and new vision and new oomph to the business that often acts like a booster stage on a rocket and lets the business grow. Mm-hmm. They're younger, they are willing to take risks, they have a longer payback time. You know, mom or dad is older and maybe a little more risk avoidant and looking at the glide path, so they don't want to make all these changes. But I often counsel the next generation to learn the way your parents ran it because it worked, and that will make it much easier. And once you learn their way and they see you've learned their way, then they will usually lighten up, take the hands off a little bit, won't grab the wheel, and they will let you do it your way. Mm-hmm. It's when the next generation wants to come in and day one completely wholesale change everything that really causes a lot of tension and conflict. Now, one thing I have to put in as a caveat is what Jason said. Sometimes the industry is changing and forcing us to change the way we ran the business, and we can no longer run it the way my parents did. And in that case, it really increases the demand for good and honest and direct communication about what's going on and how this company needs to respond.
Right. And Jason, I'm sure there's things that you've came to appreciate in hindsight that your father may have done with the company that maybe at the time you didn't realize after you started to learn about why he did things the way he did and maybe compared it to ways that you wanted to change the company in the future.
That's absolutely true. I'm reminded regularly, I would say, of things that I've done, and some of them my father said, we've done this before, don't bother, and of course, I'm going to run with it. And sometimes it was the right thing to do because we had to do things differently for reasons we already talked about. But other times, he was absolutely correct. I reinvented the wheel and realized it wasn't going to roll quite right, and he had told me so 4, 5, or 10 years ago. And that's just, I think, part of being human, part of learning as a new leader. But yes, I'm reminded a lot of what my father and grandfather had done and why I should always remember that because they built a very, very successful business.
Yeah. With Ferguson Roofing, you have a different role than your brother. So can you talk about some of the different things that you guys do and complement each other in the company?
Yes. My brother had been with the business longer than me. He stayed in the technical trades, got involved with Ferguson in the mid-90s where I didn't get involved until the early 2000s. So when we transitioned the ownership and the leadership to the third generation, I gravitated more towards the strategic business development, process improvement side of things. You know, the HR side where you have to be a little bit more political, I guess, for lack of a better term. That was my attributes. So that's why, even as a younger brother, it was determined that I would be better suited in the president role. Mm-hmm. My brother, as I said, being much more technically adept than me, always stayed more on the operational side, the production management side. Even though we're very different people and we agree a lot, but we also disagree, you know, about certain things, because our responsibilities are so different, there's not a power struggle. And if we disagree on stuff, we can usually work that out pretty easily because we're not vying for each other's job.
We'll get some final thoughts and words of advice, both from Jason Shump and Ferguson Roofing, and also Dan Bean of CMA, who presents The Business of Family Business. It's here every Saturday on KMOX. And I want to talk to you about your family business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. One of the nice things about owning and operating a business is you get to make your own decisions. You get to work on your own guidance, how you think things should be done. But sometimes there's some uncertainty. Sometimes maybe you're not running things effectively. Sometimes you need someone else to talk about, someone from the outside of the family. That's where CMA steps in. They're in the business of family business, and they know that not every family business makes it to the next level. If you're looking to have a generational transition, or maybe you're just looking at who's going to be the next leadership in your business, trying to identify the next CEO, because that could be what takes your business to the next level. There's a couple things you need to consider. Maybe even a non-family member for a certain period of time, huh? They lay it all out for you. Talk to Dan Bean at CMA. They'll make it easy. And more importantly, they'll bring the guidance, the expertise, and the knowledge to back up what they've done to so many family businesses here in the St. Louis region. My experience is you'll have a lot of questions. That's totally understandable. They're there to answer them. Contact Dan Bean at CMA. Go to cmaconsult.com to learn more. Or if you'd like to be profiled on this show, reach out to Dan too, cmaconsult.com. Third generation and family business owner Jason Shook with Ferguson Roofing, learning more about how they operate, especially when other family members are involved.
How do you guys communicate with each other?
Well, we see each other, you know, quite a bit. So most of it's going to be, you know, face to face at the office, or, you know, phone call, shoot a text, thing like that. We don't have to organize too many, you know, brotherly owner meetings just because we're in the office quite a bit. And at any point, you know, he can walk into my office or vice versa, and we can, you know, sit down and talk.
Dan, you've heard how they communicate, and you also heard how they have structured, so they each have their different roles. Is that the way a family business should operate? Each of them should have a role that is well-defined?
Yes. Well-defined roles can help avoid tension that can lead to conflict and bigger problems. And any time the role can be defined in a way that builds to the person's strengths and interest, that's even better. And when you have two or more family members, if their strengths exactly overlap, they're more likely to butt heads because they both want to do the same thing. If they have widely divergent interests, it's going to be very hard for them to talk because they just can't identify with each other. But if they're somewhat different, we call that complementary, and that's what Jason and his brother have, and that's the ideal situation because they can each do something different, a different area that the business requires, and be successful because it builds to their strengths, and they can find their own success, their own identity, but they are able to come together and talk about those major issues they need to from their slightly different perspectives, and the family and the business both benefit from that.
One of the points I want to bring up with both of you, in particular Jason, when you were talking about your father, what was his schedule like compared to what your schedule looks like?
His schedule was actually more intense, by and large. I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, he would head off to work by 5 o'clock, possibly earlier, usually the first one in the office, and oftentimes wouldn't get home, you know, until 6 or 7 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And for my early years, I was putting in very long hours as I was, you know, building the business, you know, under you know, the third generation tenure. My days have lightened up, you know, quite a bit, you know, over the last couple years. I think there are two things that really drive my father's schedule. One, it was the transition from that ma and pa to the size of the operation is right now. Mm-hmm. So he didn't have the staffing that we did. He didn't have the policies and procedures and processes in place that we did. He didn't have the history of financial stability that we do right now. He was creating all of that. So it had to be managed a lot more. Regardless if he felt the need to micromanage or not is really inconsequential. He needed to spend more time with the business. Now that we've have the history, we have a really well-developed staff, we still continue to bring on the best people possible so that we can empower them to handle the business without, you know, necessarily the president or CEO having to do a lot of the operational stuff. That naturally is going to allow me, you know, and my brother to be able to breathe a little bit easier than my father had the opportunity to.
Yeah. Who were the people your father trusted to talk to? Maybe was there any outside counsel he went to?
Yes, he had. Well, the company you know, as a whole has had different iterations of an advisory board that was, you know, compiled of whether they were, you know, when I say friends of his, professional friends of his, people that he trusted. So he had them as resources, and then other people who were also professional friends or professional advisors that may not have formally been on the board. That's always been something that my father used to lean on. And that was one of the greatest things that he passed on to me, my brother, is the realization to have those types of advisors. We had an advisory board during the transition. That was something my father was adamant about. And that was a huge help, not only to help make sure that the boys were getting good direction, but also as best as possible, my father was getting the direction that he needed for the transition. It was instrumental in helping me develop as a leader in the role of president. And it set those habits that I am relying on my professional network on a daily basis to make sure that that we are following the best practices that we can.
His father had the foresight to look for all of these things moving the company forward, which I think is really smart of him to do.
The having a board is a very critical thing to help support a generational transition. Jason talked about kind of getting the objective information and view of reality and your role in it, or what you're doing that's good and maybe what you're doing that's not so good and you need to change your behavior. But the board also gives a forum where information can be exchanged by the current and the next generation. It's where questions can be asked and answered. It's where problems can be solved. It's where issues can be debated. And it provides a forum for all of that rather than having trying to take place through the family or in hallway conversations. Mm-hmm. And it also, Jason as president and CEO, his brother has no way to hold him accountable except maybe as a shareholder or maybe trying to do it through the family as brothers, and they're not the appropriate mechanisms, but the board does hold the CEO and the president accountable. And so that gives Jason's brother a lot of reassurance, and it is the proper organizational protocol to follow. So if a board's not active and in place when we do a generational transition, we almost invariably recommend that one be there and that it include non-family members as well.
Yeah,
I would say family businesses are a wonderful opportunity and a unique opportunity to pursue so many great things, to be able to shape your own future, but at the same time to appreciate, particularly once you go multi-generational, to appreciate history and legacy. You know, I never really appreciated what my grandfather and parents had done until I actively got back involved with the business, especially at the ownership level. I never really appreciated roots and legacy and terms like that. And I was always looking forward and just pushing and pushing and never took time to look backwards. And it's very, very powerful.
Dan, do you have any comments on what you've heard today with Jason and Ferguson Roofing?
Yeah, so I've known Jason for, I'm going to say, about 12 years. And a generational transition is, by definition, a time of change. And it's destabilizing because leadership is going to change and ownership is going to change. Two very fundamental things to organizational continuity are up for grabs, and we don't know how they're going to turn out. And to watch Jason and his brother and his father be able to get through this, and to watch Jason move from how do I get control of the business and operations and making sure we're servicing the customer and developing new business and delivering business and doing all the things we got to do to make the business run day to day, and move through that progression to what he talked about a few minutes ago about giving back to the community, that's tremendous. Mm-hmm. It's hit stability, it's hit performance, And it's giving back more and more. It's doing more for its employees. So this is the American dream. And Jason and his family have been very successful and should continue to be that way.
Well, I want to thank both you guys coming in today. It's been very informative. It was nice to meet you, Jason, and everything you do at Ferguson Roofing. Thank you for sharing your story.
I appreciate that. Thank you for having me on.
Dan, great insights as always.
Thank you.
This is The Business of Family Business on KMOX. I'm Ryan Recker, and if you want to share your family's story, maybe you're situated in the St. Louis area, maybe you're someone that is going through this transition, and you want to share the insight of what your family business has learned, that's great. Reach out to Dan Bean at CMA. You can go to cmaconsult.com. You've been listening to The Business of Family Business presented by CMA. Have a great week.